Hi, everybody. This is Eve Harrow and Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. And this is going to be my last show for 5776. I'm recording the very end of September to be broadcast at the beginning of October, which is just the beginning of the Hebrew New Year, 5777. And in a minute, I want to just play for you a recording that I did last week when I was in New York at the One Israel Fund Dinner. And of course, it's with a winery, duh, because, we're going to be drinking a lot of wine during the holiday season, but not just that. It's a part of our rebirth in the land of Israel. The fact that we're growing our own wine, we're able to make kiddush, we're able to sanctify God's name over wine grown in the land of Israel. So we've got a great interview coming up with Amos Tepperberg. And then just like a little bit of just some thoughts that I wanted to give to you before Rosh Hashanah. But before we go into the interview, I do want to thank everybody here at the Land of Israel Network, Ari, Jeremy, of course, Ben and Tabitha, and Josh Nishai, and everyone. We're a real team here. This has been our first year getting off the ground and bringing Israel and the Jewish people to you wherever you are around the globe. But you're part of that team as well. If it isn't for you, if it won't be for you, we won't be able to continue broadcasting. So if you like what we're doing, go to the website. You might be on the website right now and click donate and be a part of the Land of Israel and the Land of Israel Network for the coming year. So Eve Harrow will be right back. Enjoy the interview with Amos Tepperberg, and then I'm coming right back at you. Hi, everybody. This is Eve Harrow, host of Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. I'm here at the One Israel Fund Dinner at the Jewish Heritage Museum in downtown Manhattan, and I'm with Amos Tepperberg, who's got a beautiful table here of his family wine. So there's a lot of background noise. People are starting to come in, but Amos agreed to sit down for a few minutes and tell me a little bit about himself and about his family. So first of all, welcome to the One Israel Fund Dinner.
Thank you very much. I want to tell you that I'm very happy to be here. I came from Israel 2 days ago. I will tell a little bit about our family and about our winery. I'm sixth generation of this winery. The winery established in 1870 in Old Jerusalem, in the Old City of Jerusalem. We have a different and unique story because the family kept each generation in the winery. Think about that. On those days, it was only 2,000 Jews in Jerusalem, in the Old City. All of them is poor people. And my grandfather came from Odessa, Ukraine, to Israel, and he decided to build the winery there. He was the first winery that established in Israel. After him came Baron de Rothschild, 12 years after, in Zichron, but he started in Jerusalem. And in the Turkish time, they burned his winery twice because it was prohibited alcohol in those days, but still he kept it. Then the British came, you know all the history about Israel, but still the family kept all the documents, labels, agreements, everything. We kept all the things in the family, and now we are building a visitor center in Israel to show for the people all what the family kept. And I'm the sixth generation. My father and me, we're working together in the winery. Today we are located in the front of Kibbutz Oran near to Bet Shemesh in Jerusalem, in Judean Hills. We are one of the biggest wineries in Israel today. We're producing 8 million bottles a year. Yeah, it's but still, you know, it's funny because we are big winery, but still, what we are like, we feel like a family business. Although that we have 130 employees in this winery, we feel like still we're keeping it like a family because this is what we are. We are family business.
So the Judean Hills are very well known for the quality of the soil, the quality of the grapes. But when your great-great-great-grandfather starts in Jerusalem, Jerusalem isn't exactly known for the area for vineyards. When David buys that, what we know now is the Temple Mount, it's actually a threshing floor for wheat. And if you go to Jerusalem, you see a lot of trees, but vineyards need specific kinds of places. Where did they grow their grapes?
So first of all, I must tell you that we don't invite anything today. Everything is like a circle in life, because when I see labels from 1900 that we found labels of port, of dry red wines, dry white wines. Amazing. It's writing in Arabic and in English, you know. And it's 1900. Then in 1950, 1960, something happened in Israel and people drank only sweet wine and grape juice. And in 2000, it's become back like what was happened in 1900, port and dry red wines and dried white wines. So everything is like a circle. What's happened in the past, we think they didn't know, but they know better than us.
So that's fascinating, because people think that this revolution of fine wines, the boutique wines in Israel, is really, as you said, only about like 20 years old. They started it off at the Golan Heights Winery. Everyone until then was drinking Malaga and Concord grape and stuff that, you know, you could like dye your clothes purple with and didn't taste very good. But you're saying that the labels that you found from your family's original winery was already getting into these different kinds of wines.
Yeah, and not only this, they went to different unique areas like Gush Etzion, Hebron, Efrat, all these areas. We have documents that they took a lot of grapes. It's different grapes from today. It's not Cabernet and not Merlot. Its name is Dabuki, Marawi, different kind of grape. But still, it's interesting. We are trying to find out today from those days to find out also wines to make.
So I live in Gush Etzion, I live in Efrat, and I just had taken a group through One Israel Fund to speak to Dr. Shivi Drori, who's the person who's doing a lot of the research on the Dabuk and the different wines that existed here at the time. They weren't just for table grapes, but they were actually for wine. So that's just like amazing that your family did that. And they were always kosher wines? Your family was always a traditional family?
Yeah, always kosher wines. Also Hasidish. They was Hasidish people.
So they were happy.
I must tell
they
you,
like to drink.
You know, I will tell you one episode in our family that is very interesting. You know, we can sit here a lot of hours, you know, for our story, because we have a family story, amazing family story. But in the 1918, the Templars, you know, we have a lot of Templars neighborhoods in Israel, in Haifa, in Tel Aviv, in Jerusalem, because they came, it was Christian Germans that wants to build the country. And they came to Tel Aviv also to build the country. And they opened a distillery and winery in, Sarona, mm-hmm. Today Sarona.
That was one of the German colonies.
Exactly. Yeah. So they opened a distillery and winery, but they brought all the machinery, but they didn't know how to manage it. So they came to my grandfather, Mordechai Shimon. He was a third generation. And they asked him, listen, you have a big successful winery in Jerusalem. You are very well known. Come take this place, distillery and winery, and take it. You know, do it whatever you think.
Run their winery for them?
Run, it's yours.
Oh, they yours. Gave your...
They gave him
the German business. Templars gave
exactly.
Him.
They gave him the business to, you know, to take care of this, because they didn't know how to deal. And he went with a vision. He kept still the winery in Jerusalem, but he came with a vision to be the biggest distillery in all the Middle East.
Wow.
Yeah. But you know, distillery needs water.
Right.
Most of the product is water.
And most of the Middle East isn't at the time.
At the time.
A lot of Muslims are not.
Exactly.
And the
the price was very high.
Right.
They didn't let him to work. So 8 years. 8 years he tried whatever he made in the winery, he put in the distillery. And he got, we have a letter that he's sending to his rabbi that he's almost got bankruptcy. And he wants to finish business, he wants to be melamed, to be teacher.
A teacher.
Yeah, after, think about a huge businessman that have a lot of money. Wants to be a teacher one day because he was. I see from his letters that he was, crashed.
Frustrated.
Yeah, frustrated. And his rabbi sent him letter back. Leave everything in Sarona in Tel Aviv. Go be focused on Jerusalem on your winery. You will be success. And that's what he did.
That's what he did.
And today you can see that the family kept before because of this. The business. Yeah.
So, but in 1948, the family was thrown out of the old city during the War of Independence, Jordan takes over and throws out the Jews.
Before,
what happened?
Before we moved on 1925 to Romema, Jerusalem. If you know entrance of Jerusalem today,
yes.
You have building next to Magen David Adom.
Mm-hmm.
Still, the building exists, and this was the winery. Then we moved to Machne Yehuda. We had a couple of places. Then Motza, entrance of Jerusalem, and
right.
Then Tzora. So we have,
we
have
different. Moving west.
Yeah, but think about that. today we
Jerusalem's
are...
Jerusalem's catching up to you.
Yeah,
Jerusalem's following the Tepperbergs.
Exactly. And also today we are in between the vineyards,
right.
Not in industrial. We are the only winery in Israel that only in between the vineyards like Europe.
Right.
Most of the wineries today it's in industrial areas, you know.
Yes.
And so it's nice, it's very nice. Yeah, and the capacity that we can do make there, it's a big capacity.
So where do you so you obviously sell your wines all over the world? Yes.
We sell for 20 different countries. We export. We become bigger and bigger every year. Today it's 20% of our turnover is export. And 80% we sell in Israel.
80% you sell? 80% of 8 million bottles you sell in Israel.
In
so
Israel.
Like 6.5 million bottles stay in Israel?
Yeah.
Wow, the Israelis like your wine.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, but...
You're not seeing the big smile every day.
But the export become bigger and bigger every year.
Problems with the BDS or...
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm selling to all the Netherlands and Denmark, all these kind of, countries. That I feel it because each customer chain or customer that I work with, he wants to ask not only where the winery located, where the vineyards coming from, and if it's coming from behind the green light, he will not take the wine. So that's only in this area I feel these things, but all the rest of the world, and we work from Japan, from China to Poland to Germany. Lots of countries, I don't feel it.
And so these are non-Jews drinking kosher wine from Israel?
Yeah, whatever, all these countries, all these countries that I mentioned, it's non-Jewish. I have also Jewish areas, like Jewish countries, like France, England, United States, Canada, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But all I mentioned before, they're non-Jewish and they drink. It's not easy. We need to brand it, you know,
right.
That Israel people need to understand that Israel can make a good wines, good quality wines, but we see the results step by step.
Wow, that's really amazing. So this might be like asking somebody who their favorite child is, but tell me a little bit about the kinds of wine that you have, and then do you have a personal favorite?
First of all, you know, it's like to ask who you like from your children,
exactly.
Who you like the
exactly.
best.
It's
but,
not fair.
Yeah, it's not fair, but I think I can tell you that today we have a couple of interesting things. We are the first wineries that planted the Malbec variety. Malbec is coming originally from France, but it's not fit for French because French is a cold country, and this variety needs warm weather. So Argentina took it, and today this is the best variety in Argentina. It's Malbec. We took it in 2002 and we planted in Jerusalem mountains. And today, and in 2007 was the first harvest that we went out with a varietal Malbec to the market. It was very successful. Today, you can see lots of wineries making Malbec in Israel because they saw the success. But we are one of the first wineries that using a lot of Malbec. Today, we have wine with Malbec and Marcellan. It's two grapes that it's fit to the warm weather in Israel. It's blend that aged 10 months in barrels, French barrels. Very nice. It's called Inspire de Votage, the name of the bottle. And I think it's very unique. Another thing that we have here that's unique, also it's blend of Cabernet Merlot, Cabernet Franc, and Petit Verdot, Bordelaise blend. Very nice also, 8 months in barrel. So we have different kind of, you know, we're bringing here a lot of items to people to taste.
So did you go to school to study genealogy, or you learned it in the family?
First of all, from when I was young, you know, mm-hmm. I'm in the business, but yes, I went to Tel Chai, it's a university in the north,
right.
And I studied winemaking. But I'm traveling, you know, that's what
right.
I'm doing. I'm traveling all around the world, and also I'm charged in Israel, so you learn, you know, from when you see, when
right.
you
from
meet.
Experience.
Yeah, from experience.
So
yeah.
Do you have children?
I have 4 children, yeah.
And you already chose the one that's going to inherit the business?
As I am,
are they interested?
You know,
they're little.
They're young, yeah, so I don't know yet.
Right,
yeah.
But that's good, you're hedging your bets. You should have more, just in case.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Thank you so much, Amos Zeverberg. And I'm not only hungry, but I'm going to head over and taste your wines. It's only fair. I mean, if I interview
you must.
I have to be able to tell my audience
exactly.
The wine
exactly.
is good. Okay, so have a wonderful evening. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Eve Harrow. Some interviews are just so much more fun than others. I mean, really, people. Rejuvenation, coming back at you in a few minutes. Bye. This is Eve Harrow, host of Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. My maternal grandparents, Grandpa Morris and Grandma Lily, came to the United States from Russia over 100 years ago. They belonged to the Mizrahi movement way before there was even a state of Israel. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement. Okay, so after that light little break, just a few words that I wanted to share, some thoughts that I've been having about Rosh Hashanah and about this time period. You know, it's interesting because the Jewish New Year, we don't celebrate by going and getting drunk. We do make resolutions, okay? And I find that a lot of times in the secular world, so the resolutions have to do with, I'm going to stop smoking, I'm going to stop biting my nails, I'm finally going to lose those 10 pounds. And that's important. It is important to see different stages as an opportunity for renewal. But we also have to be careful. And a lot of times these resolutions fail because we try and do it too quickly. Like, you know, stop something cold turkey and then like move into something new right away. So for some people that works, let's say, you know, for some people, if they want to stop smoking, so that does work. Just put away the cigarettes and never look at them again. But for most of us, let's say if we want to start exercising more, so getting into 2 hours a day of like really hard exercise from being a couch potato usually won't work. And then we burn out and we give up. And so it seems like a wiser idea to do some, to make a transition in a little bit slower and healthier way. So I went to a fabulous shiur, a fabulous Torah lesson from Rav Yoel Binun during the summer. Rav Yoel Binun is one of the, I think, the greatest rabbis, the greatest thinkers in the national religious world here in Israel, and he teaches at Yeshivat Har Etzion in Alon Shvut. And he is just an incredibly creative mind and how he looks at the Torah. And one of the things that he has studied is this time of year. And what he says is that Rosh Hashanah is not like there's a new year and then the last year is done and the new year begins. He said, actually, Rosh Hashanah, or the new year in the Jewish calendar, is really a transitional period of a few weeks. It begins on the first day of Tishrei, and it ends more or less like towards the end of Sukkot, when we start praying for rain and Shmini Atzeret. And so it's really, it lasts like well over 3 weeks, and really the entire month of Tishrei is what you'd call in Hebrew like a chafifa, like a transitional period. And I guess the way to visualize this would be like a chain. If you have a bracelet, then you don't have every link like next to each other. Somehow each link has to integrate with the link next to it, right? Otherwise the whole thing falls apart. And so there's a space where the two links meet. So one is actually part of the other. And that's how he looks at this month of Tishrei, that it's actually a part of last year, like melding into the new year. And a lot of it, when you live in the Land of Israel, you actually feel that. Some people might call that the season of fall, of autumn, which in Israel really lasts right now, these next few weeks. And at the end of which we pray for rain, and you feel the end of the seasons here, the end of, you know, like the harvesting season happening now, ending with the date harvest on Sukkot. Yes, we do have another harvest afterwards. We have the olive harvest, and that's on Chanukah. But you feel like the ending of where the farmers have been so intense. You know, to some degree, the school year has messed us up because we feel like, okay, there's summer vacation and then there's the new year. But the farmers were not on vacation. Anybody who was here, anybody who has anything knows farmers, or anybody that was here for sure in the Land of Israel, saw people working very, very hard over the summer, so-called summer season, be it the figs, be it the pomegranates, definitely during the grape season, during the wine harvest, which we've been seeing. The farmers that I know, the vintners that I know, have been working like maniacs for the last month to bring in the harvest, to bring in the grape harvest and start making their wine. And so that's kind of messed us up, that idea of like summer vacation, and then you start a new year. And even if you look biblically, Sukkot is not the first of the three festivals. It's the last. You have Passover, you have Shavuot, And then you have Sukkot. So that like ends that season. And again, when you live here, and it's something that I feel so badly for you who are not here and who don't understand the seasons of the land of Israel and the rhythm of our holidays having to do with the land of Israel. But you do feel that going through here. And so to some degree, what we have now is like time and space being connected because we have this time period, but we also have the physical and we ask for things and we pray for things and we want to better ourselves in ways that are not necessarily tangible, okay? Because the Jewish New Year is not so much about I'm going to get to the gym and I'm going to, you know, whatever, but it's more about our souls and that we're going to be better people and that we ask forgiveness for the things that we've done wrong in the last year and we want to be better people during the next year. We know that we're being judged, but there's always always in Judaism, there's always a blank page. You can always start fresh and you can leave it all behind. It doesn't like have to build up. And that's what this time period is about. But you have the very physical, because towards the end we ask for the rain, right? Because without the rain is a sign here of God's love, because with rain, then we have food. And now we're about to start the season where we plant. And that's during the whole, you know, the so-called rainy season in Israel. We have a dry season and we have a wet season. So we're now ending the dry season. We're grateful for the bounty, hopefully, of what we got, the harvest that we got. But now we're already thinking about the next year and the rains, the seeds that we are planting, the literal seeds that we are planting in our souls to be better people, but also the very physical seeds that we're planting for the sustenance, for, you know, to be able to eat. And that all is a sign of God's love. Read some of our prayers, read the grace after meals. If God is happy with us, he will give us rain. He will give us food. Okay. And so we're asking that as a sign for us as well. And it's all connected. If you speak Hebrew, then you know that yamim can really be two, has two meanings. It can be days. Okay, a yom is a day, and the plural for that is days, yamim. And it also means seas. Okay, a yam is a sea. So yamim is also the plural for seas. So in that very essence of the word, you have, like, you know, the water and the seas and what most of the planet is made of, but you also have days. And you have time, and you have that ebb and flow physically of the water, but also of time. And so Rav Yoel Ben Nun, to get back to him, he sees this month of Tishrei now that's just beginning as that transitional month of, you know, ending the last year, really, like, let's say 10 days of, if you want to splice together the lunar and the solar calendar, you have an extra 5 days a year that have to be accounted for in order to bring that in together. So up until Yom Kippur, up until the Day of Atonement, we really have like the 5 days of the last year and the 5 days of the new year. And then we can think about, you know, where we want to do better and ask again, as we said, for forgiveness for the things that we haven't done the way we would have liked to do during the previous year. And so I just want to, first of all, wish everybody, all my listeners, a year of health and blessings and prosperity. Without prosperity, we can't give charity. We can't do the things that we want to do. A year of being surrounded by people who love you and whom you love. No loneliness. There's so many people who are lonely. And that's so sad. Hashem is always with us. God is always with us wherever we are. But because we live also in a real world surrounding with human beings, it's important to have those relationships and that caring. So to ask God, to ask that relationship that we feel but can't see, to help us have relationships that are very tangible. All right? Because sometimes I do feel Hashem's hug, but I also want to feel the hugs of the people around me, the people that I love and who love me. So let's ask him to help us to find him, to connect to him, and also to be able to connect to the people around us. And of course that we should have a year of peace, but of real peace, where people don't wage war because they don't want to wage war, where the people who feel like that's the only way of getting their point across somehow get muddled and forget that they want to do that, and that humanity reaches our potential and becomes humane, which too often in this past year we have seen that it was anything but. So let's have a year of forgiveness, of redemption, of good judgment for all of us as people of Israel and as individuals. And I just hope that we can continue here at the Land of Israel Network, bringing you the spirit and the life of the people here in Israel, of the Jewish people, of the mission, of the role that we have to play in the world, and that we can all join together, and that 5777 will be just absolutely the best year ever for all of us. So this is Eve Harrow on Rejuvenation. Thank you all so much for listening for the last few years, however long you've been with me. And that I hope that I have the strength and the wisdom, and that I am able to keep gleaning from people around me in order to bring that to you. So Shana Tova, everyone, from here in Jerusalem. Goodbye for now. Hi, this is Eve Harrow, host of Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. You can hear a new show from me every Sunday, and every day of the week, shows from another one of my very talented fellow show hosts. Reach me, eve@thelandofisrael.com, and keep listening, everybody. We love your feedback. The Land of Israel, coming at you every day, every week. That's the Land of Israel Network on thelandofisrael.com.